Don't blink. I don't have any financial relationships to disclose. I really don't have any financial any relationships to disclose at all. That's kind of sad. But I'm going to talk about two things. For those who are numbers averse, the first one's going to talk about some quantitative numbers in the general population. Who would do this? Who wouldn't? And why? And then the second of the two studies, I'm going to start by talking about some enabling materials we're developing, packaging and informational materials. And I'll probably pass it back over to Kim just to break up the rick and allow her to talk about the qualitative study that was conducted on the materials as we were developing them. I've got, just in case you do glaze during numbers, I have some of the stuff in the second presentation that I'll be doing that I can talk about in a second too. One thing I want to note on Kim's study that's kind of interesting and she didn't bring up, and it shows up in the data that I'm going to go into as well, but not in the data that I'm going to discuss today, is that one thing that's going on with these patients is a whole thing floating around blame and who was responsible for this. And we haven't fully articulated it yet, but it looks like there's four kinds of people in this regard when it comes to our patients. The people who, when presented with the situation, assume the position that he did it to me, that it was the partner that did it to me. And that affected whether or not they were willing to do it. They also, so other people would assume that they were the guilty the party, and I got it, I must have given it to my partner. And that affected how they responded in some of the qualitative results we were seeing. For example, they might say, well, I think I ought to help my partner, I did this to him type of stuff. There was also the kind of inquisitive approach, which was the, I want to know who did it. They don't really know. They just would. I'd want to know who it was. And then the fourth one is simply a straightforward, neutral response. They didn't comment on it at all, which is kind of interesting. You know, just that people want to kind of bury that stigma and blame and into things. That's the kind of thing I can't get at quantitatively in the studies that I conducted, but that Kim started to look at, and some of my open-ended questions did as well. Since we started a little late and the other two were a little long, we're just kind of going with it. I'll probably run roughshod over a few slides and sort of hit some things. So I did conduct a quantitative study. My study was among the general population. Kim's was in the clinic population. We were interested in, if EPT is going to be broadly accepted and distributed across the country, what's the general population feel about this? Are they willing to participate? If I'm going to walk into a provider of any kind, am I going to do it or not? And what are the barriers and facilitators that are associated with that willingness? So we looked at it. PDPT has two distinct consumer behaviors. We know this if we're providers. If you don't, you should think about it as I've got to be willing to take it from you as the provider, and then my partner has to be willing to take it from me. And that last part we know very little about. We do know that in several studies, people are taking it to their partners, and it looks like they're taking it, but we don't know a whole lot about what those partners are doing and why they do it, and so on. So we have that willingness to deliver medicine to a partner. We call that patient delivery or deliverers. I'll reference it throughout. And we have this willingness of partners to take a medicine delivered to them, which is partner use and receivers. So we sought to understand this and sort of specify some personal, social, and environmental factors that come into it. Whole bunch of research questions related to it, but in a nutshell, are people willing to do it and why? And these things are available online. I actually forgot to print this one out. I have two sets of the one that we just passed out, so if you want to pull them up or contact one of us, I'm happy to go over it with you. So our methods. We were going to quantify psychosocial, we're going to look at this stuff. We interviewed people, 505 participants in 10 geographically distributed locations throughout the country with various enabling legislation, as Matthew pointed out, in place. These were places like Phoenix, they were rural areas, they were LA, Indianapolis, Lexington, Kentucky, a number of different locales, 50 people or so in each locale, interviewed on the street, outside of clinics, outside of malls, outside of public park areas, just walked up, gave them similar questions to what Kim was talking about in terms of a hypothetical. You've gone into a doctor, you've been diagnosed with an STD, your doctor is offering to give you some medicine to treat your partners, would you do it and why? Except we had a quantitative survey to do because we drew from Kim's data, from some previously existing studies in related areas, and so we were able to quantify it a little bit more. Zero order correlations in some multiple regression analysis. The first thing you should know, people want to do this. They're quite willing to do it. If you look on the right side of the chart, that's indicating participants who were strongly willing to participate. The green chart is deliverers. They are you willing to take this to your partner? Yes. The lion's share of our, this is percentages, the lion's share of the frequency of our participants did it. The lion's share wanted to do it. They wanted to do receiving too, although receiving was lower and significantly lower. I mean, there was a statistically significant difference in that people are a little less willing to receive medicine from a partner, if you ask them if your partner brings it to you, than they would be to deliver it. That's not terribly surprising if you think about the trust issues. All right, now some partner's going to bring you some medicine. Are you willing to do it? So, but it's interesting for practice. It's also interesting for enabling legislation in that we can point to this and say, you know, people are willing to do it. And if they're not willing to do it, by the way, they're really not willing to do it, which is what this chart is showing us, that those who say no, they really do mean no. There's some specific reasons why, and they say, I'm not going to do it. So it's not, and there's really no middle ground. So if you get kind of a wishy-washy as a practitioner response, then you're probably going to look at it and say, I may not be able to change their mind. Although we do have some data about the beliefs that are associated with it, so we might be able to change their minds on both of them. So anyway, as you can see, there was a significant difference between the two, as I mentioned. I'm not going to talk about this, but we actually clustered them into some psychosocial constructs. And the only thing interesting is that if you look at both attitude towards it, do you think it's a good idea? Perceived norms about it, do you think other people like you would want to do this? Do you think doctors would want you to do it? All that kind of what do other people think? And perceived control, could you do this type of questions? They were all very high, yeah, we could do it, yeah, and so on and so forth. But again, there was a significant difference between deliverers and receivers, with receivers lower than deliverers. They were all above the midpoint, so they were all in the agree, they were all in the strongly agree, but the receivers a little less so, and significantly. So we're going to have to pay a lot of attention. What we're looking at here in those first few slides is we're going to have to pay more attention to that receiver end. We get our partner to do it. How are we going to enable our partner to be able to get our patient, our index patient, to do it? How are we going to enable that person to make sure their partner takes it? You know, what are we going to do? We can't just hand it to them. They get that agreement and hand it to them. There's going to have to be more to it, or because we're not going to get full implementation if we don't. This slide doesn't show anything terribly useful in that everything was significant. Both behaviors were under the control of the attitudes, the norms, and the perceived control. And this is what this slide shows, and I'll summarize in a second. If we look at this a whole bunch, we had a whole laundry list. We had I think I actually had it on the previous slide and ran roughshod off over it. No, I didn't. We had roughly 30 behavioral beliefs, stuff like, if I do this, my partner will get better. If I do this, it'll save us money. If I do this, he could have an allergic reaction. You know, what things that are related to that. We had about 10 normative influences that had been identified in Kim's work and other research that could be related to it, stuff like the provider, stuff like the partner, the primary partner, the casual partner, those types of things. And we also had some enabling conditions. That's the third set, the barriers and facilitators. That was a huge range of items, about 23, I think. The important thing is we did a multiple regression. We have all that data, and a lot of the items were actually highly correlated. So instead of throwing all of that data at you, we did an MRC to find out, well, which ones most predict participation across the two? And what we found was that amongst deliverers, I've asked you, are you willing to take this to your partner? The things that best predicted their willingness were that they thought it would cure it easier and that it would ensure their partner was cured. So I'd be willing to do this because I know I'm going to get that partner cured and it'll happen and I'm involved in that. And amongst the influences, they thought that if the healthcare provider wants me to do it, then I'm more likely to do it if I perceive that. And oddly, if my casual partner would want me to do this. Now, we talk about some of that particular finding in an article that will be out in Journal STD next month or so. There's some reasons why that result may be, but it's a little strange. And finally, the barriers and facilitators. If the medicine is sealed, it's not just opened in a little bag or doesn't come in a non-formal way. If the medicine is sealed, that was a strong enabler of whether or not I was going to be willing to deliver it. If it had a note from the provider, not just the medicine and the prescription, but an actual, you know, instructions from the provider for me to give to my partner. And it was in some sort of official looking packaging. In other words, it wasn't homemade type stuff, but it looked like it was given to him by somebody official. And you can tell, you get the sense that it's all that trust issue hiding underneath there again, but which trust and stigma are hard to get in the quantitative stuff that we do. But those are the things that are floating under there. Now, partner use, am I willing to do it? Well, partner use was tied into an allergic reaction. And there's some, I'll talk about that in a second, but tied into whether or not they felt they could be subject to allergic reaction, that it would ensure my cure, and that it would reduce the spread of the infection, which didn't pop up in the previous one. I'd use it as a partner because I won't spread it to somebody else. They were only influenced strongly by whether or not a healthcare provider would want them to do it. Thus, the note that we may pass through the deliverer may become particularly pertinent there. And they were really interested in making sure the instructions were there. Out of a whole number of things, the only significant predictor in the MRC was that the instructions were provided. Characteristics. We asked a number of different characteristics, and I don't know that I actually left this slide in, but in our study, we looked at a large number of potentially correlated participant characteristics on whether or not they'd be willing to participate, and also on some of the beliefs. These ranged from their current relationship satisfaction, are you in a really good relationship or not, self-assessed health literacy, their income, and having previously borrowed prescription medication from a friend. I included that because this is kind of like borrowing prescription medication, and I'm actually involved in several largest studies that involve prescription medication sharing. Turns out that's actually a predictor in this too. And patient delivery inverse correlation. So those are the things that positively predicted both behaviors. If they were any of those things, as they went up, so did willingness to engage in both delivery and receipt. Now, patient delivery inverse correlations, however, were for the delivery were Spanish as a survey language, Spanish spoken in the home. So either of the Spanish variables that we had in there that we could look at, both they were less likely to participate in delivery. And self-reported number of partners. More partners, less likely. Partner use correlations, was only one. I'm sorry, I actually said that the top two were about both, but they're not. The top two are about patient delivery. The bottom one is about partner use. If you're of Asian descent, that was the only predictor of not participating in acceptance of medication from a partner. The only demographic predictor from the all the ones that we had. Seems like there's strong support for PDP amongst the public, which has implications, as I mentioned, both for legislator uptake, you know, that we should be able to get enabling legislation. People are willing to do this. It has implications for us as providers because people are willing to do this. You should be able to ask, and most people would think from our data, say yes. So it's not something you're going to bring up with your patients and they're going to go running screaming from the rooms. Although, as you saw, there was a bifurcated kind of a column. There's a lot of most people strongly willing to do it, but some really, really don't want to. People seem more receptive, as I said, to delivering it than to receiving it. Capitalizing on some of the beliefs that we talked about, if you're going into a practice or you're trying to enable this stuff, we're really going to look at, we want to reinforce that this is going to make curing disease easier. Seems simple enough, but that's what the patients want to hear, and that's why they would be willing to participate. It's going to reduce the spread of disease. We want to reinforce that. It's not likely to lead to an allergic reaction. It's like something, Matthew knows the number, but I think it's something like 1 in 100,000, something like that, the allergic reaction, the strong allergic reaction.
We haven't recorded anybody with a severe adverse event while we've been doing this. That's over thousands of trial participants and the rest of it. And the manufacturer publishes a number that's pretty much 1 in, and it's 10 to an exponent.
Yeah.
So it's in there.
So it's a pretty small risk, although people perceive that. That comes up when we ask them. So if we can de-emphasize that, as in most of our messaging, you know, there is some risk. But it's very, very small, and you should know this, and so should your partner. Then that's likely to increase uptake of the practice. And we have the environmental factors, which I mentioned. If it's sealed, if it looks official, if it comes with a note from a healthcare provider, and it has some accompanying instructions, it's more likely to be effective than stuff that doesn't. We have to tell them that we think it's a good idea, just reinforce that, and get that over to the receiving partner. And as I mentioned, some of the participant characteristics may play a role, supported by the usual stuff. All right, so with that in mind, we just